This is a very special episode for me because today I am meeting back with the team of the Museum of Cultural History in Oslo, of the research group The Horse. We have Caroline Kjesrud back on the podcast together with her Sasa Jørgensen from the research team and Ben Branderup, Master of the Academic Art of Writing. Together with me, we are all reflecting on what have we learned during this collaboration? How was it to test artifacts in practice? And what is the outlook for the future? I really enjoyed this collaboration. I hope you enjoy it as much too. Welcome, everybody. It's so nice to have all of you back on the podcast. We are now, let's dive in directly. We are now 2 weeks post-event in Oslo. And we can't expect that all our listeners have been joining for the first episode. So, Caroline, I would just like you to ask you to just outline the project a little bit that everybody can follow us.
Yeah, thank you. We have started a new initiative at the Museum of Cultural History, part of the University of Oslo, and gathered a group of scholars working with horses from their different perspectives. So We have initiated this research group about horses, and particularly about horses in Norway. We will start with that. Of course, with comparisons to the continent and other sources abroad. But the aim is to learn more about horses in Norway and the history of how people or human and horses interacted and have shared lives, and how they have lived together and worked together through centuries. So we have started now to investigate especially the history of riding in Norway, and we will look into different aspects connected to that. So in this research group, just to say that that is an interdisciplinary group of scholars with archaeologists, art history, artists, and photographs, conservators, and design historians, specialists in literature. And yeah, there are many different disciplines involved in this group. So we are actually trying to work very broadly to find out more about the horse-human history in Norway.
And for this event, or for the event that we now just shared together when we were all in Oslo, we especially had a look at artifacts from the Osbergship burial. Is that correct?
Yes, that's very true. We have this very special grave in Norway from the Viking Age, from Oseberg. It was a burial in 834 in the Viking Age. Two women were buried in this grave together with 15 horses, two oxes, six dogs, and a lot of different equipment, two sledges, a carriage, and yeah, there are some furnitures, some food, buckets, yeah. Everything you can think of in a daily life in the Viking Age. And this burial took part in a ship, or it was, everything was buried within a ship. And the ship has, of course, been most famous during history. It's very well preserved, and it's richly decorated and ornamented, and it's a beautiful craftsmanship. And within this ship, it was also a burial chamber where those two ladies were, they were placed in this burial chamber with some personal belongings. And among those personal belongings, also a very curious saddle. And that saddle caught our attention at the event 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and on that saddle, we will there we will dive in a little bit later, a bit more deeply. That was really, really interesting. So, a question to Sasa. Sasa, for you as a horsewoman and an artist, how do you see the bridge in between the ancient and modern horse culture there? So, the purpose of the research group, basically, that brings you in.
Well, that's a kind of a difficult question, but because it's been kind of a fashion, let's say, the last 15 to 20 years to bring artists into research, and then it can be that the artists are a part of to research a topic that is not necessarily a part of their practice, kind of. So I've always been looking at that and thinking, okay, what will they achieve through that? But when Carolina asked me to join this group, I felt that kind of I was representing the whole of me, like not only the artist but also like the horse person. So then I kind of felt that I had two legs to stand on instead of one. And
Yes, that makes sense.
And then I realize when the group are together and we look at things, like we look at images or we dawdle around practical things, then I feel that these two sides of my kind of knowledge is playing in and can have some relevance in the context.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And Ben, what drew you into this collaboration?
I was, of course, interested in the perspective into the practice. And when we see a saddle, how was it used? But also with the view out into the world and see, are there things in the world matching it? Is it unique? Is it made for a certain purpose that did not exist anywhere else? Or is it just a part of a whole, I would call it Indo-European heritage? And the correlation to people moving around in Europe. So we often see local as very local, but must remember that these people had contacts all over the world or the known world. So when we, for example, see the Viking stirrups, they are quite unique in the way they are shaped, but in being style stirrups, they are inspired for somebody else having stirrups. So of course, there are someone having an idea and someone else who might make a local variation of that idea, but still being a part of a very big tradition.
You also have a lifelong interest in everything about the art of riding and the historical roots. Could you discover some more insight there?
When we're looking at a practical purpose, no one invent a screwdriver if there doesn't exist any screw. It has a purpose. And when we see a saddle made in a certain way, then it's made in that way because, and not just by coincidence. So there has been a person who thought when we do it this way, it's better for a purpose. And then the thing itself can help us to find out the purpose. And the amazing thing about the saddle was that we could combine it to one of these two ladies being buried there, for the first to her size, for the second to her diseases. And we might see the saddle as something that had to be invented for that person being transported in Norwegian terrain. So, how to get around a mountain if you cannot go there with a ship or with a coach? Yeah, you need a horse in many cases if you don't want to carry that person. So, the horse should carry that person. And in that moment, seeing that she was with some disabilities that made it difficult for her to move herself. And then see the saddle in that perspective, that made it very fascinating because then it's personalized history. Then that person get even more alive to us when seeing some of her items that she really needed in her daily life.
Now we are already very deep in there. We all have, of course, seen the saddle, but most of our listeners won't have seen the saddle. So, what is so special about this artifact?
I think there's more Caroline who can go into the details about the artifact itself.
Yeah, so the artifact itself, it's kind of it's a saddle constructed from three pieces, two parallel side panels, and one back panel that kind of fixes those two side panels to each other. And what is very special about it is also the way that what we can see from the wood that the side panels are carved for the legs to be put straight forward and not down on each side of the horse. That's what how we usually see saddles today. And that's also why many people have been very confused when they have seen this saddle and also ask, can this be a saddle at all? It looks very uncomfortable, also because it has like this I don't know the English word for swissil, but it's very tall in the
The
front.
front pommel.
Yeah, the
It's a
pommel,
little
of
like an
course.
A fork.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it makes it a bit difficult to kind of with the more modern way of riding to understand how this saddle may work from a modern way of riding perspective. But since we can go deeply into the saddle construction and we have a very professional wood carver at the museum who has worked with this saddle and trying to reconstruct the original one for several years. And that has been a very difficult job because the original saddle now has changed because it was when it was buried in clay, so it has survived very well. But as soon as it was dug up and exposed for sun or light and air, the wood starts to change. And then various conservation techniques has with the best intentions, of course, has done something with the original shape, but now he has tried to reconstruct the original saddle. And then we can very clearly see that the position of the legs was meant to be forward, and also that this pommel or this the front thing must have been there to kind of tie or connect those side panels together. Yeah, so that was the most, or that is kind of the basic outline, I would say, for the saddle. And we don't know whether it has been padded with leather or something else underneath. And but we can see many different holes, original holes around the entire saddle. And that was also part of what we tried to explore in the working seminar to see how those holes could have been used for the saddle construction.
Yes, because so far, if I understand correctly, before you took up with your group now the topic again, it wasn't horse people who have been revisiting the artifacts. It was, of course, it was archaeologists who are not necessarily riders, right?
Yes, I think actually also in the research history there is at least one of the archaeologists who has explored the saddle is also a horse person, but of course then more into modern riding. So I think that is something we try to do now to actually look into historical riding and to a broader kind of comparison ground than only Norway Viking Age saddles, because then we only have two fragments. So it's not very big group of, or it's not a very big group to compare with. So, but to dive into the more historical ways of riding and also into to other sources and expertises, we can try to find out more about. And of course, the artifact itself, to go deeper into the artifact and the construction, that is the clue here. We have already tried to compare it to geographical sources, but we cannot really see any, at least not local motifs, art historical motifs with a rider with the legs stretching straight forward like it would do in this saddle. So we need to go other places to find parallels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that is, I think, what we gained from this working together, that we could share the expertises and knowledges and bring different perspectives on the table.
I'm a big fan of interdisciplinary work, and I felt very much at home at your workshop because there were so many perspectives. And I think that it's always so rich to just listen to all of them, because everywhere you get a tiny piece of the puzzle. And for me, honestly, when I was looking at the saddle, I thought, okay, this is something not for riding, but for transporting. But when we had it on the horse, then I was surprised how well it worked.
Yeah, I do still think that most riding is being transported.
Yeah.
We have in war, in narrow combat, and in the art, another terminology for what is riding, but most riding over the world through history has been transport.
And this was a particular transport, Sosa, pardon.
Yeah, and if we think about the role of the woman who was transported, if she was some kind of shaman or priest. And since I've lately been thinking a lot about Sami culture, then I start to think about, how practical are, I mean, the items that the head person would carry would be like some objects to do rituals, and that we must think very different about how they should be practically used. I mean, the saddle must of course fit to the horse, but that she was transported while she was kind of representing her rituals, or this kind of thinking that is really that we have a Christian kind of carpet over our imagination. So I start to think about in the Sami culture, the Nwai, the shamans are more alive, and that other places also, if you travel east from northern Norway, then you also run into shamans that have horses in their practice, so this kind of thinking will be also very interesting to bring along in the next step of these investigations.
I think I would also add to it that when you travel, it's also a representation situation. So you have a quite representative boat, also the ship itself. You have some coats being very beautiful with carvings. We have two sledges and all of them being very beautiful. So it is a way of being transported in a with a certain dignity, and people expecting this lady to come with kind of dignity. She's not just coming by foot or being carried there, that there is something more in transport in the way you represent yourself when you come. Nowadays, we see with what car you drive into the parking ground, that also have more than just that you are transported there.
That's a very good point. I think the representation, and also kind of trying now as in the next step, as you say, Sasa, because what we know now is that the saddle must have been functional, and I think that was a good kind of result at this point, to actually just pinpoint that this saddle, it is a saddle, number one,
mm-hmm.
and it has been functional and even quite comfortable. So, and then we can of course open the floor for new interpretations of what is going on in the Oseberg burial, because there are many, many unsolved questions. It's a very special burial, and it's it has raised curiosity and a lot of different interpretations for more than a century already. But now with this knowledge, I think we can actually reinterpret the story or parts of the story a little bit. And that's very interesting. But I think we need to do some more investigations, for example, of the skeletons, and to see whether, because now it's a kind of a clear hypothesis that the oldest lady with the different diseases must have been the user of this saddle. But it would be very good to actually check the pelvis, for example, and the size of the pelvis, and to see if it actually fits the saddle. And I mean, what can we do now to also to be more sure about what we think we have learned so far? So I think we need to go deeper into the rest of the Oseberg find, and then we can also open the floor for new interpretations. But I like very much that this representation idea that the riding or the transportation, even though it's only transportation and not narrow combat, it's still a representation going on with the riding. So I think that's a very interesting point to actually to include in the work.
We have it, for example, in coronation saddles. Earlier, when you got a new king, you couldn't see him on television, or like today, a new president. And therefore, these coronation saddles, fitting to the crown, fitting to the complete equipment, was, of course, what would tell, here comes the king. So many people would never have seen that person before. So the outfit and the representation would tell, aha, this is the king.
That's a very
Yeah, I
good
just told the ladies before we had the king today coming in.
The real
We wouldn't
king
have beaten that. Yeah, we
in
wouldn't
most
have
of the
recognized him
vessels.
without all the flags. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm still very curious about the position of these two ladies. I would more and more that I know about the elder lady, go to the hypothesis that she's a kind of a vulva, as we have a name in the Scandinavian for a religious person,
Religiously,
female representing. And then it would, of course, be interesting to see if the other is perhaps a servant or perhaps a queen bringing her vulva. So I would not, as I think this person in my head get more and more, the elder lady get more and more clear, also knowing about that she might have had tattoos and so on, and is perhaps from somewhere else in the world or whatever. There's so much about her, so I'm also a little curious about the other person, if she is the queen bringing her religious representative person, or if she is the servant of that represent as this vulva. So the other one makes me a little curious too. Now, the more we know about this one.
Absolutely.
But it's interesting that there in the chamber they have the saddle and they have a comb for the horse and they have a stick, which is like representing a riding stick, like helping with the steering. But it's only for one person. So there's only one of the women who are supposed to ride.
At least in that manner.
Or
Because we find in Viking graves a lot of stirrups, but no saddles. And I can guarantee you, without a saddle, a stirrup doesn't make much sense. Therefore, there must have been saddles in materials that we simply do not find. Belt, for example.
Leather and pads, maybe more
Yeah, leather pads and whatever. So, but we could also imagine the other person being transported with coach or sled, because
Oops.
there are coach and two sleds. And when I think about that, there were two oxes in the grave, and think about that many holy procession still today in Spain, there are coaches dragged by oxes with the religion items on that coach, for example, La Rosia, down in the southern Spain, but in many other occasions in Spain still. And there would be special white oxes that they prefer to have for that situation. So two oxes is for me like not only food, but
No.
much for food actually. So they rather perhaps would be the ones for the coach, that we might see them more as a coach for oxes than a coach for horses.
That's also very interesting things that we need to look into for sure.
Yes, and when we combine them with different coaches that has been found, for example, in Denmark, Dreiberg, coach that is interpreted as a coach for some wooden statue being transported on it in a religious situation.
And of course, coming back to the saddle and the paddings, I mean, there must have been maybe some animals like rats or something eating everything, almost everything from leather down in the grave mount. There are some shoes, maybe, but not much of
Yeah,
leather.
there are actually two pairs of shoes, I think, preserved, which is interesting. But I haven't been able yet to look into all the details about the grave, but that is clearly something that needs to be done now to go through everything and see also how things are placed in relation to each other. Yeah. Because of course this was not randomly placed there. Everything
No,
was
but we
placed with a
also
purpose.
know that the grave has been robbed for all jewelry and so on, and the grave robbers who have gone in there might also have made some mess.
Yes, that's of course a part of the picture.
Now, also from the existing saddle, you just have the tree, right? You don't have any of the leather or the fabric that was most likely put around for making it more
No.
comfortable. So
But
I think it's quite likely that you have another kind of riding pad where the stirrups are fitting, that was for the other person.
could have been.
The question is, why do they bring 15 horses? So we have, for example, in Denmark, Ladbyskibet, where there were also, I think, 11 horses on that boat. And we have other ship burials where horses is with it, but of course, many more horse burials than ship graves. So yeah, these amount of horses might of course have different reasons, but it's difficult to think that they should bring something that was not meant for a certain use in the afterworld.
I think that is what we do now, like to look into the burial with a horse perspective. That is something new that will add to the knowledge we have so far, that has not been done yet. So to put those things together from the horse perspective and how, yeah, to ask why all those horses and the different horse equipment, how may it have been used, and what was the purpose for this specific ritual, the burial ritual, but also what was the purpose before the ritual? And this the representative function is, of course, very interesting to put up there.
There was jewels kept from the Merovingian saddle in the Merovingian grave. Unfortunately, Napoleon used, I think there was 8 kilos of jewels that he used for his coronation outfit, so the saddle was ruined and at that occasion. But there be, for example, no saddle meant for a coronation of the Merovingian kings in France. So even that he got with him into his grave. And when we see the Sutton Hoo grave in England, there's more jewels kept also there. So we must see things with jewels has been taken out. So if there can have been another saddle, if we now see the vulva and see the other as a queen, it could have been a saddle with jewels, and then it would of course be gone.
Yeah, a
So
reason to
to go
pull
a
off
little bit
it.
more before we are getting too global, let's go a little bit back to our artifact that we had here and that we had for testing. We can now, after our trial, also say we are pretty sure this was a saddle for transporting a disabled person. She was sitting more on it, like on a chair than in a normal riding position. And I think it was your niece, Caroline, right? Who was our brave test rider. It was your horse and your niece,
Yes,
wasn't it?
that's right. And we had because of part of the back piece on this wooden reconstruction, or the original saddle, part of the back piece has been gone. So part of the reconstruction was also to fit that back piece to the shape of the reconstruction. But when we did that, we tried to do it on the actual test horse so that it would fit the test horse also. But we had the angles partly from the original measurements of the original saddle, but then we fitted kind of the size a bit, the width of the back piece to the horse that would carry it under a rider. So I think it was very interesting to see that part of the work. The horse is super sensitive, so he reacts very much to new things on his back. So ideally, I would have tried to put it on his back a longer period in advance. But now everything kind of piled up towards the end of
Like it always is with events, isn't it? It's always like this.
Yeah, so we didn't have the chance to actually to make him aware or acquainted with the saddle. So I was very impressed that we were able to come that far with the testing, that the both the rider and the horse were confident with the saddle on the top, with some adjustments of the padding and the girth and things like that. But they were both quite comfortable, so they were able to ride on their own. And she, my niece, Agnes, the rider, she was able to steer the horse with her point of weight and also with some help from the toes, actually, or the legs
And
on
using
the
her feet on
helmet.
the neck of the horse.
On the shoulder and
On the
on the neck,
shoulders,
right?
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So under your guiding band, they have been testing, or we have been testing the saddle. Sasha just said we were running around this horse like Cinderella with her with all the little helpers that we were dressing him up, and then we put a rider on top, and that actually worked quite well. You made a few adjustments there that was making it even more easy. Maybe you can tell a little bit about that for the people who have not been there.
Now, well, one of the things was to find out how was the girthing of the saddle, and one of the things was how what a kind of posture would be under. So we see some holes around the wooden panels and can try to guess what they have been used for. So some of them might have been used for a padding underneath, but we took just some felt, and actually, the saddle was fitting quite well to the saddle, to the horse. So that must have been a horse kind of this size also that could have moved with it. And from different cultures, we know of girth that are just put around the saddle. And we did that on the lower part. For example, the Spanish vaquero saddle doesn't have this the girth fitted to the saddle, or the stirrup to the saddle is loose around it. And we tried some idea where to put it, and where we saw that there were a bigger distance between the holes, there could have been something easier coming through in that place. And that ended up fitting absolutely perfect with the girth position. And the saddle was so by itself placing the person that there were not much doubt about for her how to sit in it. But also when we tried it at the National Museum, all of us were trying to sit in it and found out it just placed us and was quite comfortable. So we got a comfortable back position, but one of the persons at the place was smaller, and as we knew the size of the elder lady in the grave, it was quite obvious when she sat in it that fitted her quite perfect. But also your niece didn't feel uncomfortable or have a doubt how to sit when she came into it. It just kind of placed the person. Which is, of course, quite important with when we think about the saddle as being a saddle for a disabled person, that it really helped to sit.
Exactly. A very safe and comfortable way of getting transported then.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Made absolutely sense. So
it's
in
a very
the end,
professional craftsmanship, I would say, the saddle.
Yeah.
It's really, everything is well thought through. So it's very fascinating.
Now, we are not so used to in our IKEA time that a certain thing is custom made, but we must think the opposite way around. At that time, everything was custom made.
Yeah.
Which is right. So when somebody wants to go and see the artifacts now, am I going to Oslo or where am I going, Caroline?
Right now, it's not possible to see anything, unfortunately, because everything is packed down for we are building a new Viking new museum for the Viking Age in Oslo. So until that is opening, hopefully in early 27, it's not possible to see the original saddle nor the reconstruction.
Then you have to come to a clinic to see the reconstruction, right?
Yes, or if we make, I mean, we will always try to find some good opportunities to bring it out. But as for now, it's not displayed somewhere. So we will have to wait a little longer.
So I'm always saying that research was successful if we have more questions afterwards than we had before. And I can already hear when you are exchanging here that we have a lot of questions that needs to be solved. So what's coming up next, Caroline?
So now the research group will start to kind of put things down on paper, try to outline what the process has been so far to come to this point, all the preparations and the methodologies that has been used in the process for the documentation and also the making of the reconstruction. Or the production of the reconstruction, and then also, of course, for our working seminar together, and the test ride. So when we can start to kind of compare our finds and experiences with finds from everywhere else, relevant places, and to kind of and so we will try now to bring everything on paper like scientifically and try to publish this as a research paper. So that is the first work to be done, so that we don't forget what we have found out, and that's how like it works. We need to publish it. So I think that's the step one, and then we can, by doing that, we will also open the field for others to also reinterpret the grave and the grave finds. And I mean, then it will be easier for everyone else also to make their own opinions about the purpose of everything in that grave.
But you were already planning for next year.
I'm
that we
already
are having a similar that we have a similar event next year, and that is very interesting. So I can see you are planning far ahead.
Yes, because this saddle is not the only curious object we have at the Museum of Cultural History. We have a lot of both art historical and archaeological objects that we need to study to learn more about the past riding and horse cultures in Norway. I think it is a big gap in Norway. We have lost a lot of tacit knowledge and also knowledge about our own cultural history, because the history about the horse is somewhat disappearing. It has been lost somehow. Big parts of it. So we need to dig up and find out more about what has been the practice in North. And by doing that, I think one way to do that is to also look into the historical objects and continue to work interdisciplinary and also transdisciplinary science and sector meet together and try to find out through practice also how things have been used and for what purpose and what can we learn about our horse human history that in that sense. So we are planning already next year, as you say, a new seminar with both with the two of you, Bent and Selina, about tack and movability. So we will look into also some visual representations of how horses and humans are moving together, and also look into more, also kind of taking into consideration what kind of tack is used and what kind of purpose the tack has, and if the kind of the use of the tack represents some kind of knowledge, or if it's there without the original purpose being kind of used. So, but so that is one thing we will prepare for. But we also have some other activities throughout the fall, this or this autumn, and and also next semester. So there is things coming up in Oslo.
Sounds very interesting, Ben. I'm pretty sure you will get, especially around equipment, a very interesting lecture together. That's your topic.
Quite sure. And also sure about finding good relevance to things around the world. We are often seeing the Viking Age, for example, as very itself. But when we, for example, look out into the world, Karl Magne was coronated in year 800, this gravy from 834, and seeing what happens out in the world, what is brought to Norway, what is already very old in Norway at that time, and where did Norway develop its own tradition around things.
That's, and I guess,
Sessa, final words for you.
No, I was just thinking about what is special here, because we talk about that when you are riding, that was a kind of a summer activity for transport, maybe, because in winter you could easily travel with horse over frozen lakes or under special snow conditions. So then people traveled far with horse, but maybe not riding. Maybe they were driving and sledging. And then it was also easy to go really far, so to meet other cultures, so that we are not an island up here.
Yeah, we are not an island. It's true.
Sometimes boats and like horses are for transportation. And
that is,
that is actually what the Vikings were famous for, popping up not only in Byzance, but also in America.
True. But I was just thinking about that, what is special for this research group, that we all have horse interests, and that gives some kind of special chemistry among the members of the group, that the horse is uniting us also with some very good enthusiasm, that you can feel it when you are in the room, that it's so many kind of thoughts that are there on the behalf of the horses somehow.
Yes.
Yeah, so that makes maybe we can find something that is different, other answers. And also, since we are doing research in the time of internet, like there was published a book in 1995, I think, by a very famous, at least quite famous Norwegian archaeologist, Anne-Stine Ingstad, the wife of Helge Ingstad, and but she didn't have internet, so her research was then, or it was almost coming at that time, but it was at the beginning. But we can kind of just, like our last meeting, then somebody showed a saddle from Hungary, and then suddenly I could check out an ancient saddle from Afghanistan while I was listening to that. And, you know, that things can go so fast now and in a different way. So it's kind of, it's so much in front of us now. from
So I'm
the
looking,
past.
yes, so I'm looking forward to all the things from the past that we will discover in the future.
Especially when genetic are easier to use. That would be so fascinating to find out what kind of horses or even what color did they have.
Yeah, won't take long anymore, I hope. I won't take long. So thank you for today. I'm looking forward to keep in touch with all of you. Some are seeing more often than others. And at the latest next year in Oslo, we are first meeting at the Archaeological Museum for diving in deeper into the horse. And afterwards, Bent will again be in Norway and give a course about how today's practice with horses is looking like. Thank you, everybody. See you then.
Thank you, Selina.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
See you.
See you.
Thank you for listening to this very special episode. And you can hear when we are in one room, we can't hold back, even if it's only virtually. We are starting discussing things immediately. And that is what I so much like about interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary work. If you would like to join the discussion, you are very welcome. Send us something on social media or send me an email and I will definitely bring it back to the pod. You're also welcome to join the newsletter. Then you won't miss the start of the ticket sale for the Bent Branderup course next year, 30th, 31st of May in Sarpsborg. And the day before, we are all meeting at the museum in Oslo. I'm looking forward to meeting you live and in person.